What's up? It's Nintendo time. Welcome back to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of the hosts, Tim Mason. Here with me, I've got Patrick Murphy.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation?
Thank you for getting that in for Rick, who is not with us today.
I had to. It's such a good catchphrase. I know Rick told me to come up with my own, but I forget about that as soon as we leave the podcast. So
yeah,
one of these days
absolutely.
It'll come to me in a flash, but I'm not feeling particularly witty today. So
I wish I could turn the wit off like you can, Patrick.
I know it is a problem with you, Tim. You're just too witty.
Right? Anyway, I'll try to keep my wits about me. You should do the same, especially with Isaac Burnett around.
How's it going, guys? Good to be here again.
It should be a good episode. There's a lot to look forward to. The main segment this week is Box Boy and Box Girl, the newly released Box Boy title on Nintendo Switch. That's right. Bye-bye, Box Boy. More like, see you soon, Box Boy. Am I right?
I feel like this is the culmination of the BGU, the Box Boy game universe, that it is finally, this is the Box Boy's version of Avengers. This is where all, you get to play as everyone to stop the world from being destroyed.
Which is really, really cool, and we have our first ever co-op experience with it, so of course I'm all about this. We also want to talk about revisiting games. We like to tote a lot of classic games as timeless and greatest of all time, masterpieces. But when you revisit games, are they always what you remember? And is it worth revisiting some of these titles? We're going to talk about that pretty shortly. And then for our last segment, I'm going to keep a secret, but it should be funny. So you're going to want to stay till the end of the episode. Why don't we start with what we've been up to? Patrick, you want to start? I know it's going to be a little bit obvious because you are reviewing Box Boy and Box Girl for the site.
Yeah, do you want me to, like, is this going to be our Box Boy segment? I can talk all about Box Boy. That's what I've been playing, Box Boy plus Box Girl.
Yeah, I think we should.
All caps, by the way. All caps for anybody who's the correct version of that title is Box Boy exclamation point plus Box Girl exclamation point, all caps.
And is Box Boy one word or two words?
It's one word, and so is Box Girl.
And no hyphen, like the Spider-Man. You guys, Spider-Man has a hyphen. Get it right, I'll get you.
That is correct, because as friends properly pointed out, his name isn't like John Spider-Man. He is a Spider-Man.
Yep, and the creator, Steve Ditko, and Stanley wanted it to look different from Superman when you looked at it really fast. Mm-hmm. Anyway, enough about Spider-Man. Apparently, I'm still in endgame mode. My bad. We'll save Box Boy for our middle segment, our main event. So, Isaac, what have you been up to?
So, I've been replaying Super Paper Mario on the Wii. And earlier this year, I went back and played Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door again. And I realized how much I really loved that game and how classic it was. And it was one of my favorite games growing up. But another one of my favorite ones growing up was Super Paper Mario, which I got for my 11th birthday. And I remember playing that game. I have one file on there. It's like 46 hours playing that game. So I played it all the time. I ordered a copy because I sold my copy a long time ago. So I ordered a copy off eBay. It came in. I've started playing it again. And I do not like it anymore. It is the craziest thing. So if you go on GoombaStomp.com, on my top 10 games of all time, this is number 9. And I realized it's just not fun to play anymore. So I think I've been spoiled because this is a RPG platformer sort of game where basically there's a lot of platforming. You stomp on enemies to get XP or whatever. And just I didn't notice when I was a kid, but after playing so many good platformers over the years, the platforming physics in Super Paper Mario are just atrocious. And so going back to that and seeing the game design kind of devolve from Thousand Year Door to what it was in Super Paper Mario kind of makes me a little sad. And I'm surprised I didn't notice it more as a kid. But just it brought up a question in my mind, which is a lot of times when we recommend games to people we haven't played in years, you know, have we really gone back and played them in a while? Because I've been recommending this for so long, and then going back and playing it myself, I'm like, wow, this game just does not feel as polished as I remember it feeling. It doesn't feel as fun. It's not as, you know, interesting. Now, of course, this is my third time playing through it, and so for some people in their first time it might be a little bit different. But I was just surprised by just how little I'm enjoying the replay. Because, like I said, I played Metroid Prime earlier this year, too, and I see its flaws, but I still recommend it to everybody. It's a great game. Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, I see its flaws, but it's still a great game. This, I'm just seeing nothing but the flaws. That I don't see any of the greatness that I saw before in it. So I'm just curious from you guys. You guys ever had that come up before in a game where you revisit it after a couple years? In this case, it's been probably 10 years since I've played it. And they're just like, man, this game's just not as good as I remember.
Well, with that particular game, I remember playing it not really. I know I liked it. And the main thing was that you could, like, turn the world around, right, and see it from the other side. Yeah, flip the world. I never really got too into it. So I can't really speak as to that one. That was one of those games where it was, you're right, it wasn't really a polished platformer, and it's kind of a hybrid between a platformer and an RPG.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've actually talked on the show before when we've done, you know, remember, Tim, when we did our Mario year?
Yep.
Like, going back and playing some of these, like, even, you know, Super Mario 64 and the annoying camera, or Super Mario Sunshine and the even more annoying camera. I had a big problem replaying Sunshine. I just don't think that is great.
Yeah,
game.
I never liked that game.
I really liked it when it came out. When it came out, I was all about Super Mario Sunshine. But then, man, he just doesn't feel right to me anymore. They've clearly tweaked Mario in much better ways that I'm so much more used to the current 3D Mario. And how well he controls that, I could not go back to Sunshine ever again.
The biggest problem with Sunshine was it ran at 30 frames a second, and no other Mario game besides Super Mario 64 did, but they covered it up really well. But just coming back from, like, if you play something like Galaxy and you go down to Super Mario Sunshine, it's like, wow, this feels so sluggish and slow. And having to use the water, you know, the flood or whatever, also makes that kind of exacerbates that feeling. So I see what you're talking about. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't really like it. I was always looking forward to playing Galaxy or something. More than I was playing that, and it was also brutally hard. Like, playing that game as a kid was insane. So,
yeah, it is one of the harder Mario games for sure. But even still, I just, like, now I just don't like the feel of it. I think that goes for me. That happens with a lot of older games. I don't think the Super NES era I felt that as much. Like, most of the games I enjoyed then, like Final Fantasy VI or Super Mario World or ActRaiser. I have replayed, and I replayed a lot of them on the Wii U's virtual shop. I bought a lot of those. You know, Contra 3, The Alien Wars. Like, there's nothing wrong with those games. They hold up just as well today as they ever did. And people are still making games like that. But if you go back to the NES era, man, when I tried the promo for Nintendo's online service, I went through all the games they offered and realized within about 30 seconds of each that I would never play any of those games ever again. I just don't find NES games to be fun anymore, even though I grew up on that system and absolutely loved it. It turned me into the video game fan that I am today. But I just don't care for that generation anymore. I can't, if I go back and replay those games, I'm not going to find them to be fun. I already know that.
And I will disagree with you to a point. I get where you're coming from. Sometimes, like Isaac alluded to, it is that first-time experience. You're going to get something more out of it. It's going to be more engaging because you didn't know what to expect. I had never played Tecmo Bowl, and I know, like, everyone loved that game back in the day, but I just never had access to it that I can remember. So I played it for the first time with one of my co-hosts of Game Boys, and we had a blast. At least I had a blast. I was winning.
Yeah, that's a fun game.
It's simple, but it's fun. And I almost liked the simplified controls over any current football game where it's just too much, too lifelike, not as fun. Like, my ideal football game is like NFL Blitz. Like, that's as good and realistic as a football game should ever be in my eyes.
And let me ask you something really quick. Because I'll agree with you on Tecmo Bowl, and I'll also bring up a game called Baseball Stars, which I used to play with a buddy of mine in a bar in San Francisco. But I have a feeling that, like, I would never sit around and play Baseball Stars or Tecmo Bowl or Super Tecmo Bowl alone. Those games are all about having somebody with you. I don't think that they play well enough to engage just a single player anymore. But yeah,
probably
if you're playing with somebody, you can have a blast with a lot of things that you wouldn't normally like if you're playing with somebody, I think.
And I think that's probably accurate, and it's easier to, like, return to those nostalgia trips with someone, right? Like, those are just so much more engaging when there's someone else enjoying it with you. Mm-hmm. But this is, like, a constant theme for the Game Boys. We like to revisit games. And a lot of the times, there are some games where we're like, man, this does not match our memory of it. This game is not as good as I remember. But it tends, in my eyes, it tends to be the ones that were just sheer dumb fun that you like remember as just being like a goofy good time. Those games still hold up really, really well. Like Star Wars Battlefront never took itself seriously. It's still fun to play. Tony Hawk Pro Skater, still really fun to play. Like some of these games, they never tried to be masterpieces, and they'll be fun and engaging because of that years and years from now. Other games, I think, that were trying to push the limit, sometimes that backfired, or they just don't look like they did to us now. But some games are masterpieces. Some games are timeless, and I think that you have a lot of games that did the absolute best they could for their time, and that's still so respectable today. I think you look at games like A Link to the Past, and it's immediate, like, gorgeous game. Today, it looks gorgeous, but it's still so fun to play, right?
The Super NES era holds up surprisingly well. I don't think that those games have lost a step at all. I think they hold up just as well to games that are being developed today.
I would disagree with you about Final Fantasy VI, though. I played through that back in 2014, I think. I did not enjoy that game at all.
That game is awesome.
Greatest
role-playing game ever.
I had already played Chrono Trigger by that point.
Oh, it's better.
And
than
I felt Chrono Trigger was infinitely better than Final Fantasy VI because
Chrono Trigger is really good, but VI is above it for me just a little bit.
I couldn't get over the random encounters. I don't like random encounters in RPGs, which makes you really weird when it comes to JRPGs, right? But I did not like that. I thought that's one of those old game design decisions, which I know is still in modern JRPGs too.
Octopath.
I felt like, yeah, and I think.
Wait, you don't like the random encounters?
No, I hate random encounters in games. Because
no, and I love.
Yeah, I love RPGs, and I hate random encounters because it forces you to just smash A through all of these battles and stuff. And obviously, two of my favorite RPGs are Chrono Trigger and Xenoblade, and neither one of those have random battles. So I guess it's just kind of biased from that. Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door was one of my first RPGs, no random battles there. So I kind of grew up with no random battles. And then when I started playing RPGs, like, I think it was, one of the Final Fantasies, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is so annoying. You take three steps, random battle. You know?
That was the grind, man. That was what made going into any cave like a war of attrition. You knew going in there that there were going to be tough enemies, and you had to make it through, and you weren't sure whether you were going to be lucky or not. And so you had to be sure that your guys were up to snuff. That was just part of the fun of it. And I still found Final Fantasy VI to be charming when I played it. Or not charming. I found it to be really, really engaging when I played it on the Wii U Virtual Console. So for me, that game hadn't lost a step at all.
Part of my problem with that was I decided I was going to be smart and use the Vanish Doom trick to kill all the bosses, which is like instant one-hit kills, right? Well, I was underleveled, and I found out that the final boss could not be Vanish Doomed. And so I spent 6 straight hours grinding to get enough levels to beat the final boss because I decided I wanted to save time earlier in the game by underleveling.
Well, so, I mean, you see what you did there, right? Like,
yeah,
I mean, you exploited.
That's probably why.
Yeah. I mean, if you played the game normally, you would not have had to grind that much in the end. I was like, RPGs, I've never been particularly savvy at utilizing a lot of their mechanics and a lot of the abilities the characters have, so I've always had to bulldoze my way through them. So for me, I was pretty used to the grinding.
I got you. But yeah, I was just surprised because like this isn't one of those games that like Tim was talking about that was just dumb fun. Like I remember some dumb fun games growing up, like Shrek 2 on the GameCube was one of my favorite games. It was so much fun to play with people. But this one, I really liked the story when I was a kid. The story was just like, for me, for Mario games, so deep and interesting. And now it just seems kind of like it's trying to be edgy, right? Like, and maybe that's why it was so cool to me as a kid, but it's just like trying to be cool and it's not really interesting.
Well, cool never holds up. It's always going to change.
And a lot of people like this game, but I think there are
exceptions to that.
No,
like,
Spot, you're right, from Super NES.
Also, the
7-Up logo. Does anybody remember also, Cool Spot?
Like, I remember that. Cloud Strife will always be cool. But, like, if that was anything you ever, like, tried to achieve that look in real life, you would look like an idiot. It's like this weird Square Enix paradox where in its context, you're like, that's the coolest thing ever. If I walked down the street like that, like, someone would lock me up, right?
Well, they always have the coolest hair in Final Fantasy games. Like, their heroes have the greatest hair of all time.
And the outfits. Cloud is wearing, like, a purple uniform with, like, little patches of armor. It's dope. I love it.
It's that Tetsuya Nomura belt design, all the belts, because he designs every character with like 1,000 belts. So yeah. Good on Nomura with his designs. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'm just kind of spoiled because a lot of people consider Thousand Year Door just so much better and stuff. But I just thought that was interesting because most of the games I've replayed, I was like, yeah, this is as good as I remember it. Like I said, Metroid Prime. Obviously, that game has a ton of backtracking, and it's not very much fun sometimes to go backtracking through the same Magmar Caverns for the 15th time. But I still thought it was a good game. I still enjoyed it. I recognize its flaws now that I'm, you know, obviously older. But with Super Paper Mario, I'm just noticing nothing but flaws. It's really interesting.
Well, it's interesting that it's Super Paper Mario, too, because I never played that one. But I remember people not reacting as well to it, and I was really attached to the original and Thousand Year Door. Like, those were the good ones, right? And they were more traditional Paper Mario RPG mechanics. And ever since they lost that, people aren't reacting as well to them, including Super Paper Mario. People liked. But I remember people not being as attached to it as the original two. And I wonder if there's something there. Like, you can always tell a good reviewer when, even if a game's really great, they don't just endlessly loud it with every piece of praise they have in their arsenal, right? Like, they're like, ah, this is good, but I'm not going to give it that 10 out of 10. Whereas other games, they do have something special that they will be timeless. They will be as remarkable when you return to them years from now. So I'm wondering if this is ever that, or if it's like, sometimes as kids, I think we're just like not as discerning and we get really, really attached to things. And sometimes when we revisit those childhood memories, I think they do hold up. And you're like, man, I was astute. I was brilliant as a child. I like replay Link's Awakening, and I was like, yeah, this is still dope. I love it. Or the Pokemon games, like, sure, the Red and Blue, a little bit rough, but Gold and Silver, I think, are still impeccable games.
Okay, so but I'm here's, like, here's
what's going on.
Here's a game that is considered a classic, and some people consider it to be the greatest game ever made, that I absolutely adored and was obsessed with when it came out at the time. And
Ocarina of Time, I'll never go back. Patrick.
I have replayed Ocarina of Time. I've replayed that game. I will never play it on the N64 again. I replayed the 3DS version, and I was bored. I saw all the flaws, all the ways that Nintendo has improved 3D Zelda since Ocarina of Time.
Sure, there have been improvements, but the problem with Ocarina of Time is overexposure. How many times have you played that? I've played that game like 80 times.
That's not it at all, because I could go back and play Super Mario World again and again and again and Link to the Past again and again and again and again and again. And it never gets old. I play Link to the Past like once a year. It never gets old because it's so good. To me, now, it's always personal, of course, it's subjective, but that is a game for me. Ocarina of Time, I have no desire to probably ever play that game again. I realize that Twilight Princess is by far superior. It's Nintendo correcting all of its mistakes. And I there's just no reason for me to ever play Ocarina of Time again.
Yeah,
Twilight Princess is that game done better.
Yeah, I've been there before. Like, I can play, like I said, I play Prime every year again. But recently I went to pick up Prime 2 and play it, and I got about 15 minutes in, and I'm like, nope, I'm not doing this again.
Yep,
I've played this game before.
Prime is still awesome. It controls well. Yeah, Prime 2, you start it almost immediately, and as soon as they start introducing some of the concepts, you're like, I don't want to go back to this.
Yeah, because I beat it twice before. I'm just like, no, I don't want to go back through, you know, sitting in the same energy field for 15 minutes to recharge my health. And I'm not interested in doing that again. It's good. But I get what you guys are saying. It makes sense. Like, for me, Ocarina of Time, I played that when I was a kid on the GameCube Collector's Edition thing that a lot of people got as a pre-order bonus for Wind Waker.
Yeah.
You guys remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, I got that from a friend for like free. I think he gave it to me, and I put Ocarina of Time on that, and I really enjoyed it. I went back and I was recently looking at replaying it on 3DS. I'm like, I looked at the back of the box. I'd already bought it. It was like $5. I'm like, nope, I'm not doing this. This looks boring. I've already done this before and sold it. So,
yeah, it's...
I mean, we all make mistakes and we all have weird, bad opinions.
Now, that isn't to say that it wasn't a great game in its day, but we were talking about this slightly before the podcast, before we actually started. And I think there's something about there's a difference between an old book, an old movie, or an old song, where they can remain classics forever. There's not really any barrier to enjoying them. If you can read, you can pick up an old book, and it works the same as a new book does. You turn a page. And with an old movie that's 100 years old, it works the same. You watch the movie, and it plays out exactly the same. There's no difference in the actual experience. It just matters whether or not you'll enjoy the content. But with games, because they're so intertwined with the technology, that as the technology changes, the experience changes, and the experience has gotten as the technology has been improved upon, the experience has been improved upon, and so now I can't really go back to some of these older games. I wouldn't pick up an Atari 2600 again and have a blast with, the gunfighter game like I used to when I was a kid. It just isn't going to happen. Because the experience in games, we've become accustomed to quality of life things that don't necessarily come with other media. Now, it's not to say that you can't enjoy an old game, and lots of people enjoy old games, but it's going to be different for everybody, and I think it's just a little bit different than other mediums.
I will concede your point in that regard. Quality of life has improved drastically. Technology has made many improvements that are just preferable in the long run. But as soon as those improvements are somehow introduced to the games, whether it is just being on new hardware, introducing save states as Nintendo does a lot of the time, I think that's about as much as I need for a game to maintain that same standard as a current game. And I think a lot of the times it seems like there was more work and effort to stand out and to make these high caliber games back in the day. And I think that for those reasons, they will always be recognized for the achievements that they are. Does that make sense? Like
Yes.
it's
Yeah, and they
in the
should be
same way that it's
recognized as
easier to make,
achievements.
yeah, in the same way it's easier today to go out and make a big old blockbuster that's going to make a buttload of money than it was back in the day. Like you back in the day, Patrick, you know this as well as I do. In any old war epic, you had to get 1,000 guys to stand around so you could film them. Whereas, Peter Jackson got a bunch of guys for Lord of the Rings, but just CG'd the rest of them, right?
Now,
Like
however,
there's
Tim, I will ask you, do you know what movie has sold the most tickets in the history of movies? And if you adjust it for inflation, would be the biggest box office champion.
Wait, adjusted for inflation?
Yeah.
Is it Gone with the Wind?
It is.
Yeah.
So there was an old movie. They had blockbuster movies back then. They were mega movies. Blockbusters have kind of always been around. They changed in the 70s when Jaws and Star Wars came out. There's no question, because then studios really started focusing on a certain type of movie, like
Yeah,
those
some of
summer
blockbuster
action
as opposed
movies.
to, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
But blockbusters did exist to a certain extent, even back in 1939 when Gone with the Wind came out. But you're
Wow,
right.
39.
The logistics involved, well, they were different though, because think about it. It's not like the cost of movies has gone down. When you look at the Avengers, that movie's going to cost, what, $200 to $300 million, right? So for that money, I think you could probably hire a bunch of people too. It's not like Lawrence of Arabia, which has a cast of thousands. It's not like that movie cost $200 million. So these computer effects do take their. It's not like they're any less expensive, I don't think. I think they just. They allow directors to be able to do more without having to reset the shot constantly.
Yeah,
Because when you had those big epic shots in a movie like Braveheart, when the armies are rushing at each other, if somebody screws up, then you got to reset everybody and go all the way back to normal. That you probably just took you just took hours out of your filming day, and you lost some time.
I think also when we talk about games, the second generation of any given like type of hardware is usually the best. So like Super Nintendo, those are classic. Those are still good today over the NES, right? The GameCube, still good classics today over the 64 in terms of, the hardware had some time to mature. Game Boy Advance, still classics over like what I would consider the more rough around the edges Game Boy, right? I mean, it's easier today, in my opinion, to enjoy a Game Boy Advance game, up-res to HD or whatever, than it is to enjoy an original Game Boy game. There's just something.
Whereas I stand by, like, in terms of my favorite series, Zelda and Pokemon,
Yeah.
those are better on Game Boy Color. Those titles are better than anything on the Advance. And that's a different issue. That's just
Yeah.
design
Yeah, just
and
in general though, right, as the hardware matures and as developers get more comfortable with that sort of hardware, they usually crank out better games and
yeah,
ones that are more timeless.
that's why the GameCube had better games than the N64, and the
Yep.
SNES, in general, I mean, had better games than the NES. You were looking at the SNES was the pinnacle of 2D gaming, I think. I mean, granted, there were other consoles that were that had higher, you know, firepower, but the SNES generally is the pinnacle of that. And then I'd say, you know, we're still getting better. I think they're still learning how to do 3D games, and people are still coming up with new innovations that every single generation make them get better and better and better.
But if I can bring another, like, quick counter in, again, Super Mario 64 is infinitely better than Super Mario Sunshine, despite the better technology being for Sunshine. 64 runs laps around it because it's just better designed. It seems like there's more intention there. They had to put more work into it. And sure, it's a little janky now. Like, 64 games, especially visually, it was the introduction of the polygonal visual. So, like, of course it's going to look a little goofy, but now, like, a lot of us have come to love that look. It's muddy, it's awkward, but you can see what they had to do, and you can respect how well they did with what they had. And I think that's one of the best Mario games still. I know it's not the best, but it's still an achievement.
I think there are always exceptions on every console. Like, there are games that I would go back. I mean, I would want to replay N64 games, but if I had to, I think Mario Kart 64, I think, will hold up just fine. I have a feeling. I played that game a lot. I don't think things like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark will hold up at all. but yeah, I think Mario Kart 64, it's got simple gameplay, and I think the battle mode absolutely will still make it stand out.
Star Fox 64.
Yeah, exactly. Star Fox 64. It's not so much the visuals that bother me about N64 games, but the way some of them controlled. They were kind of clunky. People are getting used to it. But you're right, Super Mario 64, I have a feeling. I haven't replayed that since we did our thing a couple years ago. But that was only a couple of years ago, and at that point, you know, I was on a Wii U, so I would say Super Mario 64 holds up to a certain extent. There are some really annoying things about it, like the camera, but
yes. But
other than that, the level design is fantastic, and Mario still controls great. So
and I think there's also, like, the effort to make that jump to 3D. Like, no one had figured out the camera back then, right? Like,
yeah,
Mario maybe had one of the best cameras for its day, when we have a million examples of cameras that were so unruly, the games were borderline unplayable.
Sunshine.
So, yeah, like, it's everything has to be taken in context, but I think that we shouldn't be too quick to dismiss a game because it's old or because it's outdated. I think that sometimes you just have to take these things as they come and sometimes apply a little bit of patience. That's the other thing, is that a lot of old games, old RPGs in particular, they're a little bit more grindy, and I feel like games in general have gotten more fan thinking rather than just, I don't know.
They're user-friendly now. They're more accessible.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's a mass market. It's a mass market thing.
And that makes sense. I am a person who replays a lot of my games. I tend to replay games all the time. Now, granted, I don't tend to go back too much to things that were more than a generation or two old. But I do, you know, I do like replaying stuff. Right now I'm replaying Mario plus Rabbids. Now, granted, they only came out last year.
And you're probably
but...
replaying Hollow Knight again, I would guess.
I will be replaying Hollow Knight probably for the rest of, well, at least until Silksong comes out. Then I'll probably just switch over to that and start replaying that over and over again. And whatever else Team Cherry does after that, they could just keep making Hollow Knight games and I'll be fine. I'll never play anything for the rest of my life. I like replaying things to see, for that purpose of seeing whether or not my original opinion still holds up. Like, I'm still having a blast. I think Mario plus Rabbids is still a great game. And it's nice. Not only is it nice knowing your initial opinion was right, because, you know, I am egotistical and I want to know that I was right. But it's fun. I'm a person that rereads books and rewatches movies because I like to see all the things I didn't catch the first, second, third, or tenth time through. You know, I've probably seen Jaws. This is literally, I've probably seen Jaws over 200 or 300 times. It's my favorite movie, and I still catch things, which is amazing to me. I can still see new things in the corners of the frame that I didn't see before that give me a little tiny bit of insight into a movie that I've parsed so thoroughly that I thought there'd be nothing left. But I love doing that, and I love, you know, rereading certain books. There's a series that I have that's a 20 book series called, it's what the movie Master and Commander was based on. Fantastic nautical books, and every time I discover something new. And yeah, I love replaying games. So I look through whenever there's a little tiny bit of a lull in the Switch's library, I go back through my old games and I look to see which one would I like to replay. And
yeah.
I've done that my whole life. I love replaying stuff. So sometimes it doesn't always work out, but hopefully it does.
I think as you I found that as I've gotten older too, I've just mainly wanted to play the things I liked more than trying new stuff out. And I'm just like, well, you know, I kind of want to just go play this instead of trying to see if this is any good or not. Most of the time, at least for me personally, I have more limited time. Like when you're a child, you have all this time to play games, right? But when you get older, you get a job and you get responsibilities. It's like, well, it's time to pick what you really like to play. And a lot of times, you know, I don't really want to try something new. That's why that Indies Challenge was so hard for me. a lot of times, I just kind of want to rely on what's familiar. And that's why I have like these games that go back to all the time, you know, the Marios and like games on the PC, like Master of Orion 2, like this game I played dozens of hours when I was a kid. I still go back and play it now, and it's a PC game from like the 90s. And if you think, you know, some of these Nintendo 64 games look bad, I mean, this game does not look great. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting, you know, notice these trends we have in our thought patterns as we kind of age and get older and just see better games. I think that's actually a good sign. You know, if the games that you played of yesteryear aren't holding up to the games of today, I think that's a sign of the progressing nature of the industry. So maybe it's a good sign.
Yeah. So, listener, what are your go-to games? What do you like to return to? Are you like me? Are you literally always playing at least one Pokemon game? Or are you like Patrick and you can't put down Hollow Knight? What's your game? What do you go back to? And what's a game that wasn't so fun to return to? Anyway, let's hope that Box Boy is a game that we want to return to again and again. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Box Boy and Box Girl. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to NXpress. We're at our main event, a discussion of Box Boy and Box Girl. The 3DS immediately solidified itself as one of my favorite consoles of all time. I was absolutely glued to my 3DS. I still play it today, though I am putting a lot more time on my Switch. But there were two franchises that were immediate classics in my eyes, both introduced in the 3DS era, and that was Pushmo and the even better Box Boy. Now, there have been three Box Boy games. All of them have been A+, must-haves. I think they kind of transcend most puzzle games. There's something just so infinitely approachable and engaging, but still mind-bending about those games that makes them fun to play again and again. But on the Switch, we finally have Box Boy and Box Girl. Does it hold up, Patrick? I'm really curious. As a veteran and a fellow Box Boy fan, is QB at home on the Switch, or should he have stayed on the 3DS?
Oh, man, I'm a Box Boy fanatic. I agree with you that Box Boy gets the edge over Pushmo, even though I do think the Pushmo Crashmo series is also outstanding, and I really, really hope it, I hope it comes to the Switch, too.
It's also a little bit harder. It's like those puzzles towards the end get really difficult.
Oh, the sequencing in that is just insane when the puzzles become – when the structures become enormous. But early on, I always loved the smaller focus puzzles of Pushmo. Anyway, yeah, so does Box Boy hold up? Well, this is Box Boy plus Box Girl. So you've got Box Boy, Box Girl, whose name is QC. So you got QB, and then you got QC, and then you've got QD, which is the rectangle guy that you may have seen from previous Box Boys. I think he might have first shown up in Box Boy, but maybe Bye Bye Box
Boy. No, he was in the original.
Him and Box Girl were both in the original, right? I know she's been around forever. Okay. So anyway, we get to play as him as well. So the first of all, I just want to say this might be the ultimate Box Boy, like, compilation. That's not to imply that it has old puzzles. I just mean that it kind of, like, it's huge. It has definitely, has like Nintendo said, it has the most puzzles of any Box Boy game. And that, maybe that kind of makes sense because the 3DS versions, I think, were $5 and this one's $10. This has got a ton of content. I haven't worked my way through all of it, even though I did beat the single player game starring in which you can play as either Box Boy or Box Girl, QB or QC. So I beat that, and that is basically a regular Box Boy game. But after that, you also have a separate adventure that's a co-op adventure for Box Boy and Box Girl, which I'm currently trying to do. And also, after you beat the original game, you have a separate adventure for Cutie, the rectangle box guy. And I think we need to take these one at a time. Because, okay,
yeah, those are three campaigns, one game.
They play very differently. And I think that's kind of the genius of this game, and that's just going to keep Box Boy veterans really engaged. Now, the main Box Boy game, the single-player campaign, is your basic Box Boy stuff. Like, it's not necessarily the best. I still put Bye Bye Box Boy probably as the best single-player, you know, as the best campaign, followed by Box Boy, and then Box Boy. I'm going to keep saying the titles as many times as I can. But it's very good, and it has a lot of some of the similar concepts that you see in the past, like the lasers and the spikes, you know. It has a few new ones, though, which some of them are very clever and very fun. I particularly liked one where you're digging. And so you've got these piles of dirt, and you got to kind of snake your way through or carve a path, as the case may be. So it does have some new concepts. You can jump now with your boxes, so when you Box Boy players will know this, how you can sort of create a platform underneath yourself and propel yourself upwards. But in the past, you were kind of stuck there. Now you can actually hop with those. That's one power that you get. And it's kind of weird because they grant you abilities through, like, it's almost, I don't want to say Metroid-like because this isn't a Metroidvania, but you get abilities as you go along. Like, you're instilled with powers. So it's not like they're necessarily there just for that world. They sort of become part of Box Boy's repertoire from then on, and you can go back and revisit old worlds, I'm assuming, with that. But so it's a good single player campaign. I think veterans will go through it pretty quickly. There's a couple of changes, you know. In the past, like, the hard part was always getting the crowns, so there was one goal was just to get through the stage, and the second goal was to get through the stage using a limited number of boxes, and then also finding a way to get to a crown, which was usually placed in a awkward or devilishly tricky spot. And if you went over your box limit, the crown would shatter, meaning you couldn't collect it and you couldn't get the rewards for it. This is Box Boy and Box Girl, those things slightly differently. So there are crowns in the stages, but they are not reliant. Getting them and getting the reward for them is not reliant on a box limit anymore. However, they still do have separate rewards for the box limit, and each of these things provides a different currency. So the crowns provide a currency with which you can buy, like, you know, traditionally in Box Boy, you have rewards that you can purchase, like music or comics and some other stuff. So the crowns give you that currency, and then the medals that you can get, and you get 1 to 3, depending on how efficient you were with your boxes. The medals will give you currency to buy you custom things. So you have eyewear, I think there's face, and then there's just body. Or there's hats. I don't know. There's all sorts of stuff. You can basically mix and match a lot of costumes to create your own sort of box character.
That's totally new. It used to be singular outfits that would maybe change the entirety of his appearance, but they were thematically singular. You were a ninja or a bunny.
That's right, and those outfits used to also provide actually little boosts, like the ninja, you could actually run faster.
And you always were bunny, because you can jump.
You can jump, yeah, and I don't believe that that's the case here. I think they're just cosmetic now. I haven't noticed anything different. I have not run across the ninja costume yet, even though I bought a ton of costumes. Well, they're not, like you say, they're not costumes necessarily, they're like parts of a costume. But yeah, so now you can mix and match things. So my Box Boy has an eye patch. I kind of like him just to go like that. One of my Box Boys says, interestingly enough, when you're playing the separate campaigns, your Box Boy will keep a separate, whatever costume you've had for that campaign, he will keep. So if you have the eye patch and then you switch it in one, it's not going to mean that your cape is going to be lost in the other one. So anyway, I think the new system isn't quite as challenging. I think veterans, especially people who know how to do some of the more advanced maneuvers, and I think Box Boy fans will know what I'm talking about, the way that you can propel yourself certain ways and not use any boxes up in the process. Those people are going to breeze through this and 100% it pretty easily. That doesn't mean that you won't have fun doing it. I've had a blast doing the single player campaign. It's just that I don't find getting 100%ing it. I've 100%ed most of them on my first time through without thinking too much. Now, granted, you've always been able to reset to the last checkpoint in BoxBoy, so it's always been kind of easy. Like if you feel like you screwed up, then you can just go right back to the checkpoint. But at least in the past, when they made you use a certain number of boxes, you weren't necessarily sure until you got to the crown whether you'd done things right. And then all of a sudden you realized you couldn't do it and you had to go all the way back to the beginning of the stage. Not that it's very far, because BoxBoy stages are very short. But at the same time, this one doesn't feel quite like that. I think if you're a person, for me it was like riding a bike, man. I jumped right back in, and I was as stingy with my boxes as I'd always been. So for me, it was pretty easy to breeze through the main campaign and 100% it all. There were a couple of things that puzzled me every now and again, but it usually didn't last that long. However, I did say it was like riding a bike. Riding a bike is very fun, and playing Box Boy is very fun. So regardless of the ease of challenge, I didn't feel like it was super easy throughout the whole game. We're talking hundreds of stages here. So I still had a blast playing the main campaign. It's a little easier for veterans. I think for newcomers, you'll still find it to be challenging because you haven't learned those techniques yet. But for veterans who know the techniques, it's not quite as challenging.
So
All
it's
right.
really worth the $10.
Well, wait, that's just the single player campaign. One of the
Oh.
single player campaigns. All right, then we get into what I think is going to be far more interesting for BoxBoy players is the lengthy co-op campaign, which you can also play single player by switching back and forth. And this chooses you, and that along with Cutie, who's the rectangle box, he has his own single player campaign. These two campaigns play differently, and they to me feel much more refreshing. Even though I had a lot of fun playing the regular single player campaign with just BoxBoy, these to me I'm having to figure out all different techniques. Like I'm having so much more fun. Even more fun, I should say, playing these two campaigns because they take advantage of having two boxes there that you can switch back and forth between. And so far, like it's only slightly awkward, as all co-op puzzle games when you have to switch back and forth between characters, it's slightly awkward. But it works pretty well, and I'm finding all new exploits that are really fun to try to like minimize my use of boxes over the course of the stage. And they've come up with some really, really clever puzzles to take advantage of you having Box Boy and Box Girl playable. They even give each one of them like their own limited amount of boxes that they can use. And
Okay.
so that mixes things up, so you got to be aware of like how many QB can use and how many QC can use. And that
For
comes into play as to how you approach puzzles. Or they'll have you like start out in separate areas and you're each like running along doing your own thing, but like you may have to drop boxes down to the other player
Oh, that's so cool.
to actually maximally like be maximally efficient as you're using your boxes. Like the other player could probably get across on their own, but if you're really gonna make if you're gonna make the limits and get all the medals, you've got to think. Oh, I don't want to say think outside the box. That's a term, but you do, and it's really fun. I'm really really digging that one. And Cutie also like just him being twice as tall makes a huge difference as to how you can play him. Because so he's taller, but he can also bend over, so then he becomes longer. So you can make either a tall box or you can make a long box. And different puzzles require you to figure out which one's going to be work out the best because you can reach different heights with a long box or a tall box. And so just his ability to make different shapes of boxes, and they basically like they take you back through a lot of the same concepts. Like you'll still be dealing with a lot of the same concepts, but the puzzles will be all different, and the way that you approach the puzzles will suddenly be different. Because even something like a space that you would normally be able to walk through with Box Boy, with QB, you can't do that with Cutie because he's too tall. So you have to figure out how to get around slightly differently, and then also just figuring out whether to bend down or to stand straight up, and to whether to make a box that's straight up or to make one that's longer, really, really changes the way you approach some of these concepts and stages.
Interesting. Yeah, that's curious. So I've got a question as a veteran, and you were talking about exploits. Can QB jump on QC or vice
Yes,
versa?
yes, he
Okay, so you
can.
can
Yep,
utilize each other
and
as a box.
even as a single player, I have figured out ways to make the bottom character jump and the top player jump right off of, like, switching really quickly, like, getting extra heights, and really, like, I feel sometimes like the game wasn't intended to be played this way, but I love that about it, that you, a lot, I will say this, even in the single player campaign, a lot of the times, I didn't feel like I was following Boxboy's set path. Like, I was coming up with these solutions by myself. I felt like there were times when there were multiple ways, especially with some of the tougher puzzles, multiple, I think I broke a couple of them, or at least not broke a couple, but did things in a way that Nintendo didn't intend, because I couldn't maybe figure out the way that they did intend. And
you think that, but this is the company that you were playing Super Mario Odyssey, and you're like, hey, I got out of the level, and there's a bunch of coins. You're like, never mind. They saw me coming.
It's true, right? But at the same time, they just didn't feel like they were the right answer, you know what I mean? They felt like I was doing something wrong, and I think that probably speaks that they had something else in mind. Like, whenever there's all sorts of, you know, items around a stage, or, like, blocks around a stage, generally you're supposed to use those things. Like, they're there for a reason. And I was just figuring out, I couldn't figure out how to use them, so I just figured out a different way. I feel like this is slightly more open than Boxboy games have been in the past for coming up with your own solutions, and I really like that.
That's good. I think that's a better puzzle design in the end.
Yeah, and I think when you're playing the co-op thing, that really shines through, because, now granted, Nintendo's absolutely aware that you're gonna, you know, one player's gonna run along and jump, and the other player's gonna jump off their head at the peak and be able to reach a certain height. But it feels good to sort of figure that out when there are other ways that you can do that, and in the end, you'll come in way below. There are times when I've come in way below the maximum box limit, you know. I remember there was one where it was like the maximum box limit to get all three medals was 33 boxes. And this was one of the longer
Holy
puzzles.
Cow.
That was one of the longer puzzles, and it required some height stuff. I got in at 11. So
nice.
It's a little different than like past Box Boys, where you generally had to be right on the edge. You know, there was you never really cut that far below. But this one, they seem a little more generous in their box limits to get all the medals. But still, I've had a lot of fun coming up with my own solutions. And the thing is, Isaac, like, that main campaign is mm-hmm. basically the size of a Boxboy game in the past. Wow. However, the co-op campaign, which is completely different stages, like, and the cutie camp, they almost feel like entire games themselves. So,
there's, like, a real value there.
There is. This is by far the biggest Boxboy game. And for $10, like, I'm going to easily be putting... Probably, I mean, I can't imagine me not having like close to 10 hours into this thing, and that's as a veteran, by the way, a guy who can go through this really quickly because I know how to do all the Boxboy maneuvers. But for a new player who's just figuring this stuff out for the first time, and the game does a great job of easing you in to all the concepts, but a new player who's figuring out some of these things and hasn't had those realizations dawn upon them yet as to what they can do with Boxboy that the game won't tell you, because the game does not tell you how to do certain moves. Like, you just have to sort of figure that out on your own. I think that they're going to have a nice long time. You know, this could be an easily up to 15 hour game for somebody for $10, which is pretty good.
Yeah, more time than dollars spent is always a great thing. So I'm really looking forward to this. I can't wait to actually play it. And I know it's not even halfway through the year, but what are you thinking? Is this one of the best 2019 titles?
Well, I'm not going to go like so far as that, because Boxboy has always kind of been an unassuming game, even though for me, it's going to go in my top 10 for sure. I don't know. You know, like Isaac, you said you played the demo and you weren't really that into it.
Yeah.
And I think this game it's super solid. I'm not prepared quite to call it the best Boxboy yet. As far as the cleverness of the puzzles, I still think Bye Bye Boxboy might be the best one that used like clever devices and abilities. But I love Boxboy. I mean, it's so charming. I love the aesthetic. I love the music. I love the platforming, you know, the way it controls. I think the puzzles are always really, really neat. I think the designers, you know, they come up with a lot of good ideas. And there are times when they definitely twisted me around and played with my expectations. And I like that. So, yeah, is it going to be on my top 10? This is a loaded year, but I like Boxboy that much. So, for me, it'll be in my top 10, yeah. I don't know that I'm necessarily prepared to say, like, in general, it'll be one of the best games of the year for, you know, as far as other people's tastes. Like, this is a must play. I do think if you love puzzle games, this is a must play. And I think if you're, like, curious about puzzle platformers, this is probably one of the most accessible that there is. And it's super, like, super polished, super Nintendo. Everything about it is adorable. There's a vague world-ending story in there, but it's the same as every Box Boy before it. There's always, like, some dark thing that's about to crash into the planet that Box Boy has to go destroy. So it's along those lines.
So you heard it here first. We just got to wrap this up with a simple statement. QB in Smash.
QB... Box Boy needs to keep going on as a franchise. This cannot be the end. I'm so glad Bye Bye Box Boy was not the end. Box Boy needs to keep going.
It's alarming sometimes that these game makers can put so much into a game and you think to yourself, oh, surely they've exceeded all of the potential puzzles they could ever come up with. And then you get a sequel, and then you get another sequel, and then you get a fourth one, and it's the biggest yet. Yes. It's backwards, Nintendo. How do you do this stuff?
And kudos on the co-op thing, which I was not necessarily looking forward to. I was looking forward to the main campaign more. Really, really digging the co-op thing. I think, and I think playing it with another person will obviously make it much better because you get to talk about it and coordinate with each other. But even as a single player, it's totally doable, and it's still, and a lot of it's super clever.
Which is remarkable, because normally when you have to do control two characters as one person, it's awful. So I'm glad to hear that it works even in that capacity. So if you're into puzzle games, pick up Box Boy and Box Girl now on the Nintendo Switch, and go check out all the previous entries on the 3DS if you never got around to them, because they are some of the best on that console. And I will go so far as to say that they're some of my favorite games on the console, period. So we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to look at something that Patrick isn't thinking outside of the box. It's very much thinking, I don't know what, but nothing good. So don't go anywhere.
Energy surge knocked out power across the entire Pacific Northwest. This needs someone who can figure out exactly what we're dealing with.
You're not suggesting who I think you're suggesting.
We have no choice.
What the?
Are you in charge here?
Yes, I am.
Nope! Wrong! I'm in charge!
Allow me to clarify.
In a sequentially ranked hierarchy based on level of critical importance, the disparity between us is too vast to quantify. Agent Stone?
The doctor thinks you're basic.
Listen, pal, I don't know if you realize
who... I'm sorry, Major. What was your name?
Benny.
Nobody cares! SFPD!
Meow?
Ever since the initial trailer dropped for Detective Pikachu, we at NXpress have been incredibly excited across the board for that movie, not just the Pokemon fanatics. But everyone legitimately thinks that this movie looks like a super solid adaptation and like a really exciting movie. Just the other day, we got the trailer drop for Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie. And you guys, I don't even know what's real anymore.
I couldn't even hold my laughter until you finished that sentence.
There's just a lot to digest. None of it savory.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to throw back up, is what you mean.
This is what video game movies are. At least it's like the balance has come back. Because with Detective Pikachu, for a second it seemed like, oh my gosh, is there going to be a good video game movie? Now we've gone back to the way things used to be. I feel safe again.
Right? Everything that you know is as it should be.
Poor James Marsden, by the way. That's all I could think when I came out of that watching that trailer.
Yeah, what was he thinking? I've got a lot of questions
about this movie. I think everybody
does. So did Paramount just film a Jim Carrey movie and then throw in the Sonic stuff later? Is that what happened? Because, like, I'm not sure that Sonic's actually the main character.
I know.
I'm pretty sure Jim Carrey has more screen time, at least in the trailer, and I won't be surprised if in the movie, too, because, honestly, the only part of this trailer that I did like was a very snarky Jim Carrey with a cool mustache.
I think he's Eggman, right? Not yes. Dr. Wily.
He's not Dr. Robotnik.
Or Robotnik,
Eggman.
Wily, that Mega Man, yeah. I think it's always a mistake. I hope they don't include that scene that they basically played the entire scene in the trailer.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
Of him meeting the military guy. I hate when they do that in trailers because that's not a tease. That's just showing you an old scene from the movie. I mean, Carrie looks like he's at least having fun, which he hasn't done in a role in a long time. So that's a positive. I don't think he's having quite as much fun as Ryan Reynolds is having. In his recent movies. But I think he's doing his best to try to do that. I'm not sure the writing's going to be up to snuff in this one, because some of the jokes were just not working. But yeah,
the joke about kidnapping? A joke about kidnapping, really?
His like interactions with the military guy, it's like, all right, you know, it's not as quite as funny as you're making it out to be. I'm not sure why we're seeing this entire scene play out. But it's possible that Carrie could redeem this movie slightly. It's the rest of it that yikes.
Yeah. I saw somebody online today talk about that this looks like the greatest hits version of 90s Jim Carrey. And I can kind of agree with that.
Yeah. So there is maybe some silver lining to this, and it is maybe Jim Carrey. We'll see. That remains to be seen. We've seen 2.5 minutes of this movie. All the rest of it is bad, confusing, and we've just got to talk about it a little bit.
Is Sonic an alien?
So I think Sonic got to go so fast that he busted into a different dimension is my guess. And there's nothing to insinuate that in this trailer. I just think it is.
Okay. I thought he came from somewhere else. I thought he said that in the trailer.
Well, and he says something about it looks like I got to save your world.
Yes, yes. So what, is he an alien? I don't get it. Even if he's from another dimension, isn't that kind of weird? Like, what happened here?
He went so fast that he went to a different place.
Okay, all right. I'll buy that for now. Why does he have human teeth?
Wait,
there's nothing to explain that horror.
That's to generate all the memes online. That is what that's for. That is right. for just, oh my gosh. I never expected them to come up with such a bad design for Sonic.
Oh, it's horrible. This is coming off, again, sorry to draw countless comparisons, but it's impossible not to. Looking at Detective Pikachu, so faithful, but so good and so lifelike and so immediately lovable. You look at this and you're like, what the hell happened to Sonic?
Yeah. It's as bad as the Goombas were in Super Mario Brothers, the movie, right?
A little bit closer of an adaptation.
Every hero has a genesis.
Every bit is horrifying. Yeah.
I mean, there's something about this that, is this going to be like a Starman plot? Did either of you two see that movie? It was a John Carpenter movie with Jeff Bridges, Karen Allen.
Unfortunately, yeah.
No, that's a good, unfortunately, that's a good movie. What are you talking about? I think Jeff Bridges nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
You know what? No, I was totally thinking of a different movie. Starman was good.
Yeah,
I was thinking of a different movie. Starman with Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Starman
Isaac is about an alien who comes to Earth, and he basically goes on a cross country road trip with this woman and whatever. They've got the military chasing them. And so I'm like, is this just a ripoff? That seems to be what's happened here. Like James Marsden, was he playing a sheriff or somebody? I didn't really catch that part.
He's literally just some sort of cop, but never in uniform. That's the other thing about this. They didn't want to do an actual adaptation of Sonic, mind you. they just wanted to like film a bunch of generic locations, CG a bunch of stuff in it, and say this is Sonic. I'm like, no, it's not. Nothing about this is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Now there is that shot where Eggman ends up at the very end. He's on some other world. I guess that must be your alternate dimension or Sonic's world, right?
Yeah,
that looks like some fantasy land.
Well, and he's different too. He's got a different mustache and he's bald.
Yeah.
So he got to another dimension and it changed him. So maybe that's what happens to Sonic. God, I hope so. Like maybe Sonic looks better in his own world.
Oh man, I don't think so though.
I don't think so either, and it's troubling.
Yeah, I can't understand how this got past like R&D or like quality assurance or anything. It's literally the worst design, one of the worst designs for a video game character I've ever seen. It's as bad, or maybe not quite as bad, but it's approaching the Goombas from Super Mario Brothers, the movie. And this whole movie smells like that movie does. The whole real world plot, you know, the whole just, I don't know, it feels like that. Even Dennis Hopper, you know, he played King Koopa, and it reminds me of Jim Carrey here, right? It's just kind of that.
Over the top.
Yeah, over the top ridiculousness. And I don't know. Like, they could have just taken, like, Sonic's model from Sonic Adventure on the Dreamcast, and it would have looked better than this.
They also could have made a Sonic the Hedgehog movie that was about Sonic the Hedgehog in any capacity, and not some like generic real world guy meets comic book / cartoon character in the real world, and this makes sense somehow, right? Like,
so what about that scene with Eggman is actually at the end of the movie, and they're setting up a sequel. They're gonna do like the whole Sonic cinematic universe with this.
God, they will not have the money to do that. I can assure you.
What do you think the odds? What do you think the odds are that like Tails or Knuckles or somebody else shows up in this?
Knuckles is gonna show up.
It's gonna be a Nick Fury moment that you have to wait until after the credits.
Yep. Knuckles,
so stupid.
The Sonic Initiative.
Right, and too bad they're no. Tails and Knuckles are gonna show up at the end.
Yep.
And when Eggman and Sonic are back in their real world or what in the Sonic world, I should say, in Green Hills, and they're gonna tease like Shadow the Hedgehog, and everyone's gonna be like, oh, okay, who cares?
No, what's gonna happen?
It's gonna be like Mewtwo.
Knuckles is gonna show up at the end. And he's going to be, like, all memeing. He's going to be like, hey, Sonic, do you know the way? It's just going to end right there. It's just going to stop it.
Or James Marsden, as the cop character, is going to, like, lose his gun. And, like, what could make Sonic even better? Give him a gun. Like Shadow the Hedgehog, that one game.
Oh, my gosh.
For James Marsden. He went from being Cyclops, who, granted, was probably, he's not the greatest X-Men of all time. But still, I mean, to go from that to this. I want to point out, like, cinematically, the difference between a movie like this and a movie like Detective Pikachu, which, when we first discussed that movie, one of the things that made it stand out from other video game movies is how well put together it actually seemed, how the production value seemed so high.
Can you say production value 8 more times, at least?
Yeah, and that was a big deal. Like, that actually looks like a movie should look. This looks like something, this looks like what used to happen in the 90s and early 2000s, where they just throw something together really quick. It's the video game, or it's the movie equivalent of video game, like, you know, tie-ins, or not tie-ins, but what do I want to say? What is the word for that? When they, like, the Batman game. Like
licensed Adam, titles.
Licensed, yes. It's the movie version of a licensed video game. It looks like garbage. Like, everything from the first-person shots of him, like, running along, it just reminded me of, like, I don't know, Phantom Menace and, like, the pod racing, and it's the same shot as that, or the dumb stuff that was in Doom when they tried to do first-person perspective. It was so stupid.
But at least they had set pieces there. Like, I swear to God, they just filmed, like, Georgia or something. Some random streets in Georgia, and they're like, just throw the hedgehog in somewhere. It doesn't matter.
I wonder, like, okay, so the whole thing with Sonic was that he was saving the woodland creatures, right? So do you think he's going to be doing that in this movie? He's going to be saving woodland creatures?
No.
I'd be more concerned that the woodland creatures need to run from him.
Obviously, they'd be terrified by him because he's not of his planet.
We also
got to
talk about, like, apparently Sonic isn't affected by time. at all, because at one point he's like looking at his watch when there's like a bunch of missiles, and I'm like, that's not how going fast works, though.
Yeah, ripping off Quicksilver from Avengers,
but,
right there.
But Quicksilver unless he was going, was already in movement and moving fast, right? That's that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's like the Matrix, right? So it's like he was moving so fast that it became slow motion for him, that the rest of the world became slow motion. But I do want to. All right,
special relativity.
Exactly. So I want to ask you this.
Is like literally not moving. Like those rockets are standstill.
Technically, he could be. Okay, this is getting really nerdy, but he could vibrate so fast, close to the speed of light.
If
everything
you say
else around
speed
him.
Force, I will punch you.
He could vibrate so fast, right, that he just kind of. Everything else stops around him. I mean, that's like this whole special relativity thing, right?
My last two questions on this, Tim. One, will he run so fast that he changes the rotation of the Earth like Superman? Will they copy that?
That's scientific.
And
you can rewind it that way.
Or two, will he save a woodland creature much like Starman did? Will there be a scene when he brings a deer back to life?
God, let's hope so. But you absolutely, Isaac, you got the terminology right, and you're ready to write this script. He phased so hard that he phased out of his reality.
That's right.
That's what happened. Yep. I bet you money.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Yep. And this is totally gonna have sequel, like set up at the end, because there's no movie today that doesn't set up a sequel at the end, and then we're never gonna see it because the movie's gonna bomb.
That's right. This movie won't have a sequel, but you're right. It'll be setting up for one.
Because it's just like all kinds of generic licensed garbage. There's nothing here that's Sonic the Hedgehog besides the worst adaptation of a cartoon/video game character since I don't know.
So does this make you
the Super Mario movie? And
well, if it's as bad as the Super Mario movie, we obviously have to see it.
Yep, it has to be one of those you go watch. Yeah,
I don't want to give them money, but I might have to. Like, that's the issue, right?
Yeah, I know. I understand that. There's conflict there, but it might be worth it, because you have to rely that the general moviegoing public is going to avoid this thing like the plague. So I wouldn't worry too much.
You guys think, does this make you guys worried about the Mario movie that Illumination is putting together? Like,
not
do you
at
think,
all. That one's
fully, okay.
It's animated, fully animated. So, it's going to take place in the Mushroom Kingdom because they're not stupid.
Yeah.
Like,
it's animated. That's the key. Like, fully animated. So
just making sure.
If they were making a live action Mario again, yes, I would be very worried about that. But no, not an animated one.
Does this prove that the future is like just still so dark for game adaptations? Or
Pokemon, I think, could. Well, I always think, look, the bottom line with video game adaptations isn't that video games, well, they generally aren't that, the story sucks, so they're really not suited for movies. That would be my argument. But, however, they haven't really brought a lot of talent to them. And I know we could argue that they've brought some acting talent to them, but they haven't really brought filmmaking talent to them. I'm sorry, they just haven't. So until they actually sit down and get a good writer and a good director, we're not going to have a great video game movie. But Pokemon looks like that could actually be happening.
Yeah, let's say it could buck that trend for sure, which is great. It looks like whoever made Detective Pikachu really cared about the production value, wanted the movie to look like that world, wanted it to look like a neo-noir, like just so much care and attention to every single little detail. And look at all those Pokemon we got to see in just the trailers. We get to see one lively woodland creature. And he looks worse than ever. And God, I wish we could go back. Let's hope that Sonic can run so fast he can rewind time. And literally cause this movie to never have even been conceived of. Because that's how bad it looks.
What do you think the odds are, Tim, that he puts on Halloween costume like E.T. did so they can walk around normal people?
Oh, probably very high. because
right now there's a writer out there for the Sonic movie that's like, damn, why did I think of that?
Right.
And the CG's just so bad.
That's too logical.
Gosh.
Oh, and the CG's terrible.
Really bad. Really bad for effects, I think. Like on Sonic. And they set the whole movie, they have set the whole trailer to Gangster Paradise, which is just like
another odd choice.
God.
Very odd choice. But
it's like they're going full 90s for this.
Yeah.
Like they're just embracing the 90s-ness of it, which is like
a mistake.
It's a disaster in the making. I do kind of want to see it now just to be ironic, but I probably won't. This just looks like one of those that you just...
You just know that you're in trouble when you saw the trailers for like stuff like Alvin and the Chipmunks and the Smurfs, and you didn't have this bad reaction. Like, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, 345,000 dislikes on YouTube, as opposed to 243,000 likes. So it's headed its way to be one of the most disliked videos ever.
Which is like maybe something that someone was going for, and congratulations, you achieved it. So follow your dreams and make bad movies. I think that does it for our show. Let's wait and see on Sonic. Maybe we're all wrong, and it's the movie of the year, wins the Oscar. James Marsden, best actor. Or maybe Jim Carrey, excuse me. Anyway, thanks for being here, guys. Isaac, where can we find you online?
Just a Goomba Stomp. I haven't read anything in a while, but I'm soon to be coming back and writing some more stuff for the site. So I just appreciate you taking a look there.
Awesome. And Patrick, how about you?
Always at Goomba Stomp. You can look to find my written review of Box Boy plus Box Girl pretty soon. Should be up within the next couple of days. So go ahead and check that out if you want a little bit more in-depth, although I went fairly in-depth in this one. Otherwise, you can, of course, find me on Twitter at Sordid Cinema. Tweet at me what you think about the Sonic movie.
Oh, yeah.
Please.
I am Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N. You can find my work on Goomba Stomp and my other show, Game Boys, all about co-op gaming. It's a pretty good time over there. Although, if you listen to the most recent episode, which just came out, I made some interesting choices while editing. You know, I kind of feel bad for ruining one of the best moments in recent gaming history. So go listen to the end tag of that episode if you want something truly awful in your life. Not quite on Sonic's level, but it's not good. So enjoy that. Anyway, we'll be back next week with all things Nintendo. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. Drop us a rating and a review. Hopefully you say something kind and don't just completely destroy us like we just did Sonic. But we do listen to feedback, so let us know. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Oh, come on.
Okay, pal, I want answers.
Basically, it looks like I'm going to have to save your planet.
Oh, is that all you got?
No, but thank you for asking.
Uh-oh. Whatever this creature is, our job is to secure it, neutralize it, see what makes it tick.
Look at this! I took 9 million steps today.
Stay in there and be quiet.
How much longer? I can't breathe in here.
Do you have your child in that bag?
No. I mean, yes, it's a child, but it's not mine.
It's not your child.
It smells like body spray in an old ham sandwich.